This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to The Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's our Forest Aren't Fuel Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I am not in the studio with...
Hey, this is Glenn Ayers.
Right. Hi, Glenn. And our forests, as you know, are still under siege, and the culprits are all around us. Like we say, biomass is a biomass. Okay. Regine Spector and Irina Kostaki are corresponding authors of Feeding the Zombie Plant, The Struggle Over Biomass in the United States, Department of Political Science, University of Massachusetts, Amherst, and they'll join us for the interview. How about a quote of the week? Quote, "The earth will not continue to offer its harvest except with faithful stewardship. Cannot say we love the land and then take steps to destroy it for use by future generations." Close quote, and that was Pope John Paul II. And I think that takes us to our interview.
Yeah, this is a great interview with a really local angle. I mean, it is an amazing story that we've covered in the past on the Enviro Show about the fight, the battle to stop the Springfield, I'm going to call it dirty biomass incinerator from operating, Palmer Renewable, so-called renewable energy, PRE. But this is a review article that talks about that long history and especially the systematic disenfranchisement of the community down there and dealing with the regulatory procedures and legal battles that occurred. You know, the Conservation Law Foundation was involved in that, and many hundreds, literally hundreds of community activists. And they call that the zombie plant because it just kept getting killed and then resurrecting like a zombie time after time after time. In fact, it's, you know, we think it's dead, but it's still going through the court hearing process, the appeal process. So anyway, this is a great interview with some amazing women, very smart people who looked at that and used it as a case study for how activism really works. And I think that we link to it in the blog here. Folks should read that article and then listen to the interview and think about some of the things that we talk about and how we can apply that going forward, especially here in Western Mass. So we'll listen to the interview and then maybe we'll talk about it some more on the other side.
So today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by two authors of a recently published paper that is very specific to the local struggle here in the region, the Springfield biomass. I'm going to call it the debacle. It went on for years and years. And the title of the paper is called Feeding the Zombie Plant, the Struggle Over Biomass in the United States. But this uses the Springfield biomass plant, Palmer, so-called renewable energy, as an example of how this biomass, which we call biomass on the Enviro Show, how this became such a deal and how it was manipulated during that entire process. And so we are joined by the two authors of this paper, which I found very interesting and really excellently written. We're joined by Irina Kostaki and Regine Spector, the two authors of the paper. And so if you would both introduce yourselves, tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to write this paper, and then we'll get into kind of the main themes that the paper covers. And hopefully this will give our listeners some insight as we're moving toward, and this is kind of what I'm thinking about, we're moving toward this new phase in Massachusetts of energy facility permitting and siting. And that is a critical issue here in Western Mass. There were just some articles in the local newspapers about that this weekend, about how there's a lot of concern in Western Mass. And this permitting and siting issue around the Springfield biomass plant just crystallizes that concern for me when I read that paper. So again, it's feeding the zombie plant, the struggle over biomass in the United States, and we're joined by the two authors of that paper. So please, welcome to the Enviro Show, introduce yourselves, and then let's get into the discussion.
Sure. Thank you so much, Glenn, for having us on. My name is Irina, and I graduated from UMass Amherst in 2022, and I started working on this paper with Regine my senior year. We started this in the fall of 2021, and it began out of a project that I wanted to do with her independently outside of the energy policy class that she was teaching. I was a student in because I heard about this issue of the biomass plant that was proposed in Springfield and saw that it was exemplifying a lot of the topics that we were talking about in class on energy justice, and also just interested generally because of how its proximity to UMass and its just local ramifications. So it started from there, and then it went on for another 2 years of us interviewing people and getting really into the weeds of the story. And it, again, really exemplified a lot of different issues in community input and permitting and all of the things that you talked about. So we're excited to get more into it.
Thanks, Irina, and thanks to you all for having us. My name is Regine Spector, and I'm an associate professor at UMass Amherst in the Department of Political Science. And among other responsibilities and roles, I teach courses, including on energy and energy, environment, climate. And the course that Irina was in investigates or invites students to really think about how it is that we use energy today and what the possibilities and prospects are for future energy use in light of the climate crisis. So the way I teach the class is very much informed by history and both a national and a global perspective. And I always like to use cases from close to us here in Western Mass, whether it's in Springfield as this biomass case exemplifies or across the state more widely, because I think our students really can see and it resonates when they have a case close to home that they can identify with. So I was thrilled when Irina wanted to dive into this project in more depth through an independent study, and I'll let her take it away in terms of what we decided to do and how we did it in the midst of the pandemic. As she mentioned, we were conducting these interviews over Zoom because of the challenging nature of doing in-person interviews at that time.
Yes. So I guess, yeah, like I mentioned, so this began in the fall of 2021. And to give a little bit of an overview of just what this story is and what we covered, we did this case study of a biomass plant. It was proposed in Springfield in 2008, but it wasn't until around April of 2021 that the permit for the plant was revoked. So for those 13 years, community activists and different lawmakers in Springfield were trying to repeal the permit for this plant because they knew that it would harm a community that already had great asthma rates, just underlying health problems, and biomass would have exacerbated that with the emissions. So by starting this in 2021, a few months after the Department of Environmental Protection revoked the permit, we were able to sort of comprehensively look at what happened over these 13 years. So we got really into the weeds about it, and this study really covers a lot, as you can imagine. But by doing this over 2 years, we were also able to kind of see the ramifications of what and the fallout of what happened after this permit was revoked. So in 2022, biomass was actually taken out of renewable energy subsidies from the state. So we were really able to follow this until now and how it continues to impact people out in Western Mass and other people in Massachusetts. So yeah, our study fundamentally was just about why it took so long for this plant to be appealed and for this permit to get revoked, because people had been sounding the alarms for quite a long time. And that's where the name for the paper actually comes from, the zombie plant, because people in the community thought that the plant was dead, and then somehow it was always like brought back to life like a zombie. So again, we really just wanted to know why it took so long and what the policy and legal hurdles were for this appeal process. And we learned a lot about biomass in the process, but we also just learned a lot generally about environmental and energy processes in Massachusetts at the local level. And so studying this at the hyperlocal case, we really got to see how community voices routinely are just left out of these siting and process decisions. A lot of the people that we spoke to kind of didn't know about the permit before it was approved. Even people on the city council kind of felt that it was a done deal before they really got to discuss it and understand what it would mean for their community. And we also just wanted to look at a lot of the environmental justice issues of this case because there wasn't really a lot of cumulative impact done. Springfield, if people don't know, has a lot of communities of color. There's a lot of underlying health issues, and just that really wasn't taken into much account by decision makers because the plant didn't exceed like certain state environmental thresholds. And there was just difficulties in the state and local jurisdictions around permitting. So all of that just made it very, very difficult for people to have their voice heard in this situation. And eventually, yeah, it did get revoked by the Department of Environmental Protection in 2021 and eventually taken out of renewable energy subsidies, which is great, in 2022, but still continues to be interesting and relevant in the context of like permitting and community input when we think about the facilities that are built, especially in Western Mass, which tends to sometimes have more of these, or it takes on more of like the burden than the eastern part of the state and gets a little bit less coverage too. So just have to continue to be watchful with it.
I think we were really inspired by many of the people we spoke with, including those who are advocating and struggling on behalf of their communities. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to so many of the people in the organizations who volunteered their time to both talk with us and share their stories and experiences. We spoke with some of these folks, and we also really focused on reading in detail the history of what happened through the press, the court cases that went through various levels of government. And we were really inspired, especially by people at the Public Health Institute, including Sarita Hudson, the founder of Arise for Social Justice, Michael Ambuzi, the work of Mary Booth at the Partnership for Public Integrity, doing incredible research both here locally but also nationally and now globally on biomass, as the European Union has incentivized biomass as part of their renewable portfolio standards. And we were also really grateful for people at Climate Action Works, the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition, and from city councilors and city officials who worked tirelessly to continue to stop the plant from being built. And that includes Jesse Lederman, who at the time was a city councilor who is also a UMass grad. So we wanted to give a particular thanks to him and all of his efforts advocating on behalf of the folks in Springfield. So, as Irina said, I think that we were really inspired to study up, which for us meant really try to understand the corporation itself and the ways in which they used the financial, the political, the legal system to their advantage in every step of the way to keep the permit in place.
Well, this is Glenn. Let me jump in and say a few things. And that is that this is really a fascinating case study, as you said, with, I think, some really, really important implications for the way that communities are systematically disenfranchised during these kinds of processes and how this level of environmental injustice is so difficult to deal with when you're up against a bureaucracy. And I don't want to say that the bureaucracy is uncaring, but it's almost built to be unable to respond to legitimate concerns of communities. It just doesn't really function that way very well. You know, there's no specific codified public involvement process for this sort of thing. And I think that, you know, that points to some kind of structural problems that we have with the way these types of facilities are foisted upon communities that are, and you know, that's where the Western Mass part really comes in, that are not necessarily prepared or have the resources to fight off these kind of corporate raiders that are coming in, because they see an area that they can take advantage of and can pollute. And I think your paper does a great job of pointing out, you know, those concerns using this example specifically, but it certainly applies to a much wider level of concern, especially as we're entering into this new phase in the Commonwealth now of having the state take over energy facility siting and permitting. We don't know what that's going to look like, but that was just passed in the most recent climate law that was just signed by the governor. And there's a lot of implications. And I think this case study really shows us some of the things that we need to be concerned about. But there are also things that activists and organizers need to understand, how the system sometimes, well, often makes it practically impossible for these kinds of issues to be raised in a meaningful way and addressed. And that's really where one of the big problems is. And I don't know if you want to talk about that, but how that concept can be brought into this discussion as we are moving toward this regulatory rulemaking process. I testified during the process of the hearings for the energy siting and permitting, and I specifically raised this as an issue, that there needs to be a strong regulatory component that requires a formal public participation process in these things. Of course, those regulations, they exist currently in the waste site cleanup program, which is, I'm going to say, 310 CMR 40.1400 maybe. But that example needs to be brought into this energy siting and permitting process so that there is required formal public participation in the decision-making process. Now, I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, that's a really important thing to us. And that was something that we wanted to study and understand a lot in this case, is the way that community voices, like you said, were being disenfranchised and really weren't taken into account much during this process. And one thing that I was really interested in was how sometimes the community input was just incompatible with like what the decision-making process was like in the jurisdiction that the city had, because the city was more in charge of like the zoning for this project, for example. But, you know, what people care about is the health impacts, the environmental impacts, but those weren't the same arguments that like the city was taking into account. For example, we kind of looked at this big lawsuit that the corporation that was proposing this biomass plant, there was a lawsuit that kind of came down to the definition of an incinerator. So the corporation was arguing that because the biomass plant was an incinerator, they didn't actually even need a permit in the first place, and that they should be okay building this plant. And so it was just very interesting to us that one of the ways that corporations are able to push these proposals forward is by hinging on, you know, very small definitional things in policy, and not necessarily like the grander issues that communities care about and the environmental issues. And so that is one of the things that makes it really difficult. But yeah, I don't know if Regina, you want to talk more about that, but it is something that we saw as a good improvement in this new proposed, or this new law that was just passed, that now those voices have to be taken into account more before proposals are even proposed.
Yeah, I think these questions of jurisdiction really rose to the fore for us. So what the city is able to control is different from what the state controls in terms of siting versus air quality and environmental permits. We also learned a lot about politics within Springfield and the ways in which the ward, the at-large representation system for elections really set the stage for the permit to even be approved without many people in the general public even knowing, but that one of the key initiatives and points of activism after the plant had been given the permit was to actually change the representation system and the electoral system in the city to be more representative. And so I think those are the types of changes that we were able to trace in the paper, how politics at the city level started to shift and change, how lawsuits, both at the city level but also at the state level, continued to privilege the company, whether, as Irina said, it was related to this question of the definition of incinerator or also other legal issues. And ultimately, I think you're right, Glenn, that we really came to an understanding about what communities really wanted, which was to be in the know, to have access to information before the deals are signed, and to be able to be in dialogue and at the table and influencing these decisions before they're made. So one of the things that I understand the new climate bill includes is a requirement for developers to do some community outreach and also for cumulative impact analyses to be part of decision making. And that's, as I understand it now, through a new Office of Environmental Justice and Equity that is part of the Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs. So I think as I will be watching this unfold, I'd like to continue to follow how these new offices and mandates are implemented, what types of consolidated permits are fast-tracked and how. And as you mentioned, I think it's always important to have a watchful eye on these processes and their implementation so that communities, advocates, activist groups can continue to shape the process and have the input that they deserve, as they're the ones that are feeling the impacts of these energy decisions. In this case, it's a generator, but there are also concerns with battery storage facilities, transmission infrastructure, and other types of infrastructure that will be crucial to our goals to both be net zero, to be carbon neutral, but to also do so in a way that doesn't reinforce the legacies of the previous fossil fuel energy infrastructure and system, and instead creates a kind of a more democratic, just grid that reduces harm, especially for historically disadvantaged populations that have borne the burden of our fossil fuel infrastructure.
I have a question, Dio, here. You really caught my attention when you were talking about the definition of incinerator. I mean, obviously, common sense tells us a plant that incinerates trees is an incinerator. But I read just recently that this plant in Springfield is still in court, or the owner or whatever, the promoter. Is that true?
Yeah, it is our understanding that they filed a case that seeks to contest the DEP's revoking of the permit. I'm not sure actually where that stands, but that's another case to follow. The incinerator issue was because they argued that burning green wood chips as opposed to demolition materials somehow meant that it wasn't burning waste. And because the city of Springfield had no official definition of the term waste, it was therefore legitimate, right, to burn, but wasn't an incinerator. So it was really a technicality that they ultimately won in the courts. The Supreme Judicial Court ruled in favor of Palmer in that case. So those are examples where definitions, words, concepts like renewable or incinerator really matter. And they're contested politically in different ways, whether at the policy level, in the legal space. And our brief literature review at the beginning of the paper really talks about how across the country, different states define renewable differently in their renewable portfolio standards. Things that we might consider to be fossil fuel based are actually renewable in some states across the country. So it is important to keep a watchful eye on how renewable or clean gets defined, and then what the policy implications of that are for new generators or for new infrastructure. And as we try to focus on in the paper, really always coming back to the community, the impacts on the community for health, for environment, for democratic participation is always what we really need to be centering our analysis on. And that's ultimately how I think we're going to arrive at both more knowledge about what's happening at the local level and also lesson learned that can be then built into legislation like that, which we're seeing right now at the Massachusetts state level.
Yeah, I think one of the really inspiring thing about this case, and that I hope people listening find inspiring too, is that, like we mentioned a little bit earlier, biomass was cut out of the RPS in 2022. And that was an example of how activists were really able to change like what the state defined as renewable energy and what got subsidies for those credits. And so, because up until then, one of the things that we didn't mention, but I think is interesting to talk about, is like in the background of this case happening, Massachusetts was also in the process of rewriting its biomass legislation to make it more widely accessible for renewable energy credits. But through just this consistent activism from the community, they were able to stop that, and they were able to get to cut out biomass completely out of the RPS. And so I think that that's one of those inspiring things, but that also kind of goes back to what Glenn was talking about, is, you know, we don't want it to have to take that long. And ideally, if communities can get into the decision-making process earlier and voice those things, and so it doesn't take 13 years, that's really ideally where we'd want to see that, of course.
Well, let me jump in and say, you know, we follow this process, and I specifically want to shout out to some of the folks that were involved, and I'll be making a point by the list that I put down here, and that's Michael Ambuzi, who was a leader in this effort. We had her on the show in the past. She is deceased, but she was an amazing organizer and activist. Susan Teberge of the Western Mass Climate Action Now group, and also involved in the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition. And Mary Booth, who we've also had on the show, and who is just an amazing scientist who has taken a different pathway, I think, than most, you know, scientists who work for corporations. Mary is kind of on a trail of her own. And Janet Sinclair, who was very involved in the Greenfield biomass opposition. And then Jana Chickwin, who is very involved in the Russell opposition to the Russell biomass plant. And I think the point that I'm making is that these were all women who were leading this effort. Yes, there were a lot of other people involved, but the leadership was predominantly women. And I think that that really speaks to the fact that the proposed plants were all proposed by men. And I don't want to make this to be too sexist, but it clearly is part of this dominion over nature and the, you know, the patriarchy pushing this kind of, however you want to describe it, control. And I think it's striking that it was, you know, really a women-led opposition that was successful. And, you know, I'll say Meg Sheehan, you know, she was very responsible for getting the RPS regulations changed through the Manomet study. And, you know, we helped collect signatures during the process. We were going to do a ballot petition referendum, but she worked out a deal where they would do that study. And so to me, that's just striking that there's that level of concern. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to appear to be too gender biased, but, you know, the fact that this paper was written by two women to me is also significant. And I think what I'm trying to get at is that we have an amazing amount of concern for future generations within this emerging matriarchal situation. And to me, that is really important. And I don't know, you don't have to have an opinion about that, but I know that we talk about that a lot on the show as well, that, you know, this is something that's significant. And we currently have a, you know, a woman governor leading us, and she has appointed many very smart, intelligent people into her cabinet and various parts of the government. And I'm hoping that that is also reflected in these new positions that will be determining how things are going to be done, not only in Western Mass, but throughout the state. And I guess I'll leave it there.
Well said.
Well, thank you, Glenn. I do appreciate that. And I also really appreciate your work and your show and all of the guests you've had focusing on this issue over the last decade or two. I will say, I do think there's a lot of effort within the state at the state level to promote some of these changes and to implement them. And I also think we still always need to keep a watchful eye. For example, there are storage procurements now that are legislated at the state level. And while those seem like they're a good idea to balance out intermittent supplies from like solar and wind, such that, you know, when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, we can still use that energy stored in batteries, for example. There are important ways in which the devil is in the details and what type of storage really matters. If it's pumped storage hydropower, there are significant challenges to ecosystems that arise from that, not to mention doubly or triply incentivizing that type of storage and the cost that it would impose on ratepayers who are already paying for that through our energy markets governed by ISO New England. So I think this is where I would say our advocates, our communities, our leaders still need to be watchful about the ways in which corporate interests can become involved and become drivers of certain pieces of this legislation, and to make sure that we're in dialogue and in whatever spaces need to be taken up, whether it's the space of a policy meeting, of a Zoom meeting, of a protest, whatever it is, that these spaces are occupied by concerned citizens.
Spot on.
Yeah, so I just want to say once again that we've been talking with Regine Spector and Irina Kostaki. We've been talking about the feeding the zombie plant, the struggle over biomass. In the United States, that's the title of the paper, but specifically about the Springfield biomass plant. And we'll put a link in our blog so that folks can download that paper and a PDF of that paper and read it. Just recently published, just within the last few weeks. Very fascinating reading. And we really, you know, first we want to thank you for being on the show and talking about this, but also for the immense amount of work that you really put into this, drilling down to this, using the Springfield biomass incinerator, because that's what we called it on the show all the time, dirty biomass incinerator, drilling down into that and raising all of these policy issues. This paper is really worth reading, and we hope that the activists will read it and learn from the examples and have a better understanding of how to be, you know, really involved in this process as we go forward. So thank you once again for being on the show and for the amazing work that you're doing in this arena of energy policy and public involvement.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure to be on. I'll just say that the link is available and the article is free before January 5th, but feel free to reach out after that if you'd like a hard copy. And I'd also just love to give a quick shout out to Irina. This was her senior research project, and she's now pursuing her master's in journalism at NYU, and it did a tremendous amount of work and legwork in putting together all the interviews and the outlines and all the details that you're reading now. So real shout out to you, Irina.
Very good.
Thank you so much. And I couldn't have done it without you as a mentor and a guide. Regina is so smart. So thank you, Glenn and Dio, both of you, for having us again. Just to echo, we're so grateful for you allowing us to talk about this and for your interest in our paper. it did start out as like a niche passion project. So it's nice just seeing that other people are also interested in it and that it's making somewhat of a difference. So thank you to you both.
Onward. Well, good interview. Hey, biomass my ass, Glenn, you know?
Exactly. We had that huge banner that we used to use in parades that said, and that this was for the specifically for the Greenfield biomass opposition. It was a banner that you made. I think it was about 12 feet long, maybe, or wide, and maybe 8 feet high, something like that. And it said, "Welcome to Brownfield, home of the toxic incinerator." And I think that that is the kind of activism, getting you, you know, right in your face activism that was very successful. The amount of opposition, you know, eventually prevailed both in Greenfield here, in Russell, you know, unbelievable opposition. And finally in Springfield, the last of those dirty biomass incinerators to really be defeated. And it took the community organizing around the issue of public health and impacts to, you know, already marginalized, disadvantaged communities. And, you know, now I think we have in front of us an effort to make sure that those concerns are incorporated into the so-called energy revolution that we're going to be facing here in Massachusetts and elsewhere. And so lots of lessons learned from the biomass struggle and things that are directly applicable to the rulemaking process that we're going to be involved in when we implement this new climate law that we talk about. So let's all get active and get involved, and together we can make a difference if we apply the pressure in the right places at the right times.
Right. So what else? What's left?
That's it. Just one more thing, and that's to remember.
To remember to listen to your mother. This is Dio saying adios.
And this is Glenn Ayers saying, we kicked biomass out of Western Mass, and we got to make sure that we protect the forests. We don't want to burn them down. We don't want to chop them down and burn them in incinerators, but we likewise don't want to chop them down and replace them with industrial solar landscapes. So get involved. This is a really critical time for energy policy development in Massachusetts, and get active.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.